The Guardian.
Hello, this is Media Talk. I'm John Plunkett, sitting in for Matt Wells this week. And what a week it's been for the radio industry. It started with the only awards ceremony longer than the Oscars, the Sony Radio Academy Awards, and ended with an explosive set of radio results, which were record-breaking in more ways than one. Plus...
I'm fed up with you telling me what I think.
I don't care what you're fed up with. I don't care what you're fed up with. You can think what you like. I can tell you my opinion.
Don't tell me what I think.
Yes, Adam, I'll be telling you exactly what to think as we pick up on the other big media stories of the week. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, the Sonys had some pretty big-name special guests, including someone from girl band The Saturdays and Roachford. Remember him? But it's nothing compared to the star names we have in today's pod. First up, broadcasting consultant and MD of Kidsco TV, Paul Robinson. Have you got a bulging awards cabinet, Paul?
No, but I have got a cuddly toy with me.
It's got a cuddly toy, that's good. One for you Roachford fans out there. And to my right, there's Mr. Steve Busfield, who you may have heard just then, The Guardian's head of media and technology. Any gongs you'd like to share with us, Steve?
A long time ago, when I worked for Press Gazette, working for a publishing company called McLean Hunter, I won News Reporter of the Year. But as the best-known other magazine there was Packaging News, it was, you know, wasn't that difficult.
Now, first up this week, it's the Rajars. They are the most anticipated set of figures for as long as I can remember. The headline stats: BBC Six Music increased its audience by nearly 50% to more than 1 million, while Radio 2 breakfast host Chris Evans added an extra 1.5 million listeners to the 8 million togs he inherited from Sir Terry Wogan. Paul, let's start with Six Music. This is the station that DG Mark Thompson wants to shut down because it doesn't have enough listeners. Is a million listeners enough to save it from the axe?
Well, this makes it just about the top DAB station, apart from BBC 7 and the smash hit. So this is now a sizable station. A million listeners a week is a, you know, very good station. I think this makes it highly embarrassing. I mean, the question is, I guess, whether this audience will sustain, whether people have tuned in because the station's about to go and therefore they're having a listen to it, or whether it will actually continue. I suspect it probably will continue. So I forecast now they will not be able to close it. This is actually such a big shift. And you don't see digital stations doing this. It never happened ever in a digital station in the UK to get this amount of growth in one radio.
You heard it here first. That's your prediction, that the Trust will tell Thompson to reverse his decision and keep it
open. I think they'll look elsewhere, yes.
And I guess, as you say, it was always going to get an uplift in listeners because of all the publicity. Nothing like saying you're going to shut something down to get people using it. Just ask your local library. But Steve, there wasn't an uplift in listeners for the Asian network, sadly, which lost another 3,000 compared to the previous quarter. So clearly something about Six Music which people are enjoying.
Yeah, although, I mean, the Asian network didn't really get anywhere near the publicity that Six Music did. I mean, you know, if you look on Twitter and if you, you know, read the press reports, there was an enormous amount about Six Music, you know, and lots of celebrities coming forward for it. And there wasn't anywhere near that sort of voice for Asian network. I'm not a big listener to either. I tried Six Music and found it wasn't quite for me. I very rarely listen to the Asian network, but, you know, but there doesn't seem to be that sort of that goodwill towards it. I mean, I think on the decision about whether they close it or not, I think, you know, there's a possible win in here for an awful lot of people apart from Mark Thompson, because it's his review that suggested that they should close it. But if the Trust were to change rent now and say, you know, we've listened to what the listeners are saying and, you know, and they want to keep it, then, you know, then that might be kudos for them. And then, you know, there's the interesting situation of, you know, the new government. I mean, is, you know, Dave Cameron, who's seen by many as a BBC basher, if he comes in and says, you know, do you know what, Six Music, it's got all of these fans, it's got all of these listeners, you really mustn't close it. What would Mark Thompson do then?
I mean, one thing about the station is that it is still quite expensive to run, isn't it? Always best part of £10 million goes on content. Whereas you get someone who runs a station such as NME Radio, another digital music network, who says, well, I could do it on a much smaller budget. Maybe if it does stay on air, they're going to have to look at that and review that.
Well, I think it's a question about what you actually do. And, of course, the reason it's expensive is because Six Music is live. You know, the DJs are live in the studio at the time of the broadcast, whereas many of the commercial stations are actually pre-recorded. They're actually voice-tracking the links and they're putting it all together, which is a far, far cheaper way of doing it. And Six Music also has lots of guests and it does live music and documentaries and speech, which is expensive. If this station had, say, 5 million listeners, its cost per listener hour would look really reasonable and really decent. I mean, the reason that Radio 1 and Radio 2 look such good value is because they have such huge audiences, but their production values are similar to Six Music. If Six Music can further increase its audience, you know, its relative cost goes down. So I think, you know, if they might be encouraged now to do some marketing of Six Music, it's never had it apart from this closure marketing, they could probably drive that audience up to maybe 2 or 3 million quite easily, I think, based on this result.
They're never going to get as much marketing as they've had in the last few months, though, are they?
Well, they might spend money. They've never really had TV marketing, not substantial TV marketing, like, you know, you see Chris Evans popping up all over the place when he started his Radio 2 breakfast show. They've never really had that. They've never really had any outdoor marketing. So I think you could do a lot more with it. And there's obviously a momentum behind the thing now. So, you know, if I was the BBC, I'd be really putting some money behind it if they're allowed to keep it.
It's been almost a perfect protest. We had the double Sony win earlier this week. We had the big Rajar increase on Thursday.
Jarvis Cocker was so eloquent, wasn't he?
He was
the way
indeed,
he did it was just absolutely beautiful.
You know in your heart of hearts that if Six Music goes, the commercial sector isn't going to take up the slack. There's no money in it. I mean, advertisers don't want to reach out to alternative types who wear second-hand clothes and grow their own potatoes. No point, really, is there?
And the protests have been very much powered by social media, hasn't it, Steve, in terms of the Facebook group and on Twitter? And you think maybe this kind of backlash maybe wouldn't have happened a few years ago without those kind of platforms to organise things on?
Yeah, I mean, there's 180,000 people on Facebook. And, you know, I mean, the events of the last few weeks have shown, you know, that those social media things, when they're well targeted, can seem to have an enormous effect. Although whether they actually affect the vast majority of the population is another question. I mean, you know, we were sort of discussing the other day about how the election debates went down, and, you know, and on Twitter there was all of this talk and there was all of this Clegmania, and it sort of seemed to affect lots of people. But actually, when you compare that to, you know, the 10 million people who are watching it on ITV and not engaging with social media, then, you know, then it's a small but very targeted audience.
And the consultation, the public consultation being overseen by the BBC Trust, comes to an end next week. And then it's in the hands of Sir Marco Lyons and, I guess, David Littimer as well on Trust as to what happens next. The other big story in the Rajars was Chris Evans, whose breakfast audience of 9.5 million is frankly unprecedented in modern times. Paul, on the surface, it's a triumph for Evans, it's a triumph for Radio 2 controller Bob Shannon, and also, of course, for Shannon's predecessor, Leslie Douglas, who hired Evans in the first place.
Well, I think this is almost unprecedented in terms of a single person on a BBC network producing this sort of single audience gain in one quarter. I mean, he's only been doing this show for a few months, and already first quarter, huge gain of 1.5 million, which has propelled itself to a gain of 1 million on Radio 2, already the nation's most popular network, and now even more so. And of course, this takes Evans way beyond, you know, rival Chris Moyles in terms of total audience. What it seems to say to me is that Evans has probably done three things. I think he's got existing Radio 2 listeners who maybe weren't listening at breakfast to now try at breakfast. So he's got more listening from existing Radio 2 listeners. And he's brought in new people, probably from a combination of stations. Too early to really figure out where they've come from, but it looks like it might be partially commercial radio, maybe a bit from the BBC networks. And then the really exciting thing is he might actually have brought people in who weren't listening to radio, because the overall radio listening figures to all radio are at an all-time high. So I suspect Evans might just be, if there's anyone could do it, he's the one sort of personality who might get people to change their habits and even listen to radio when they become lapsed listeners, which is an incredible thing.
But there is also the political nightmare, though, isn't there, which you've written about, where Radio 2 has been criticised for impinging on the commercial sectors. And, you know, and Radio 2 is one of the big areas that that the commercial radio really resent. And, you know, and here it is doing incredibly well. And the Trust are telling the BBC management that they shouldn't be appealing to younger listeners. Well, Chris Evans is clearly bringing in some younger listeners to Radio 2 than they had before.
I think it's about the age of the listeners, but also it's more than that. I think it's about public service content. And I think the argument probably now is this. You know, Radio 2 is unquestionably a superbly popular network, but is it doing enough to use that audience to deliver public purposes? And I think you could argue, in fact, that the controller now should be asked to increase the public purposes on the network. Because were it to lose a little bit of audience by doing that, more speech maybe, maybe some more challenging music, that would totally be appropriate given the size of the audience to Radio 2 now. The Radio 2 Breakfast Show with Chris Evans, it's playing popular tried and trusted hits. There's not too much new music on there, which there was when Wogan was on. There's not very much speech on there. It's all jolly japes and chatter and competitions. I think the BBC now needs to think very carefully about its public service delivery on Radio 2 and probably up its game in daytime, not just in the evenings and weekends.
Well, that's right. There is the kind of spectre of the shadow of the BBC Trust hovering over this, in the sense that a couple of months ago, a report into Radio 2 said that, as you say, there should be more public service content on there. It was very clear in saying that it shouldn't get any younger than it already is.
I think Littimer's supportive of that. I think David particularly has been leading the charge on that. And it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do for audiences. It's also the right thing to do for commercial radio. Not that commercial radio deserves to be propped up. And commercial radio has actually done okay in these radios. It's actually increased its audience by almost 0.8 million million listeners. So it's done okay. But, you know, Radio 2 being so competitive and so strong, you know, must be another worry.
But when I first started writing about radio 10 years ago, this is commercial radio, were critical of Radio 2, about it was growing too big for its boots and eating into the commercial radio's heartland audience. And that was when the station had an audience of 9.5 or 10 million listeners. And now it's approaching 15. I mean, you can certainly have too much of a good thing. I always think on the radio results, you can tell if the BBC did particularly well because they don't crow about it too much because they're slightly embarrassed about it.
Well, I mean, Jenny Abramsky used to actually say that to me openly. You know, we don't want the figures to be too good because we're not actually there to maximise audience. And I think she genuinely meant that. I mean, she genuinely was trying to make, you know, good radio services. And I'm sure that's the case with the current management now. Good radio services, though, tend to produce big audiences, which can be embarrassing when they're as big as this.
And a thought, please, a quiet moment for Chris Moyles, who was very excited about becoming the number one breakfast DJ when Wogan left. But sadly for everyone's favourite breakfast DJ, it hasn't quite worked out that way.
No. What does it say about Wogan as well, though? I mean, because he was...
What a loser!
he was this enormous figure. He was this icon. You know, there were all these people who were desperate that he was going. And, you know, and yet... Evans has massively increased his audience.
Well, I don't think you should say Terry was unsuccessful. I mean, Terry though was of a Terry was, you know, of a certain age, and therefore certain people would find it very hard to listen to him. You know, if you're under sort of 40, I mean, Terry Wogan really did feel like he's coming from a different generation. I mean, let's remember, if you launch yourself as a DJ onto a very successful station, you will do very well. Then on top of that, if you're Chris Evans and you get massive marketing, and let's face it, the BBC really did throw the book at this. I mean, you know, I think you could argue the BBC maybe overextended itself in terms of the promotion it gave to this. You're going to do well. Now, it's done better than I forecast. I forecast an increase, not quite as big an increase as this. But I don't think it's surprising it's gone in that direction. I think the size of the increase is surprising.
And people say when Evans first took over that maybe the show wasn't what it could be and it took a while to warm up.
That's just bollocks, isn't it? I mean, that's just bollocks.
Sorry, listeners.
I mean, that was always going to be, that was always nonsense. I mean, look, Evans did this at Radio 1. He did this at Virgin Radio. You know, he does this. You know, he does bring audiences in. I mean, it's just the scale of it that's so staggering.
Possibly less controversially, there was good news for digital radio, which now accounts for 24% of all radio listening, which is the biggest increase since Radar started measuring this sort of thing. There were audience gains for digital services, including NME Radio and Jazz FM. Absolute 80s, or 80s, perhaps I should say, made a good start, as well as the BBC services such as One Extra and Radio 7, and of course 6 Music that we've heard about. Do you think this increase in digital listening, has it turned the corner?
I don't think it's turned the corner, but it's solid upward progress. I mean, I think last book we saw a flattening or a reduction. So I think if you look at the long-term trend, the trend is good. What I think is interesting is that it looks like the rate of growth is accelerating. And that's what we need to do, because on the current trajectory, you know, we're going to go digital probably, you know, when we're all actually in a square box. If the rate of increase actually increases, that's a really good sign. They've got to keep momentum up, they've got to keep pressure up, but it's a good sign. Doesn't mean we're out of the woods, no, but it's the right direction.
Probably partly due to the 6 Music effect as well. I mean, you know, all of that talk about the other digital services that the BBC had, there were probably a lot of people who didn't know that they existed.
There's a really good point here, and that is if you look at the split of digital listening by BBC and by commercial radio, the BBC contributes substantially more digital than commercial radio does. So if you take 6 Music out of the mix now, that number's going to decline, and that's going to have a substantial negative impact, I think, on the growth of DAB. I think you could actually see DAB stalling if 6 Music disappeared.
Thanks for that.
Adam, you're obviously upset that David Cameron's not Prime Minister.
I'm not upset.
You probably are. Calm down.
I am commenting. Don't keep saying what I think.
This is live on television.
No, don't keep telling me what I think. This is what you do. You come on, you say, no one won the election.
No, don't.
You talk to me. I'm fed up with you telling me what I think.
I don't care what you're fed up with. I don't care what you're fed up with. You can say what you like. I can tell you my opinion.
Don't tell me what I think.
So, Steve, have you got any advice for Adam Bolton on his tactics there?
Well, I think Alistair Campbell knew exactly what he was doing, didn't he? I mean, you know, he could tell that he was getting Bolton's goat up and, you know, and just kept on prodding and prodding and prodding. But Bolton's had quite a controversial election campaign. I mean, to be fair to him, at that point he did look as if he was absolutely shattered after, you know, broadcasting non-stop for about 72 hours or, you know, probably more.
He did look a bit piggy-eyed, didn't he?
But he later that night he also had a bit of a contretemps with Ben Bradshaw. And then there was the moment during the leaders' debates when he asked Nick Nick Clegg a question that wasn't scheduled, and there were discussions about whether that was acceptable for the rules. And, you know, and now there's this sort of, you know, I mean, it's rather like the Six Music thing. There's this sort of Twitter campaign, you know, where people are sort of, you know, talking about Sky and is it turning into Fox News and, you know, Murdoch's organisation and how this all works. And, you know, and there's a very complicated sort of ownership structure, regulatory structure, and, you know, and just, you know, the rights and wrongs of it all. Rupert Murdoch owns The Sun, which is, you know, which is allowed to say what it likes and has been very, very pro-Cameron. You know, he owns most of Sky News, and that isn't allowed to say exactly what it likes because of impartiality rules led by Ofcom. The Murdoch family, through James at the McTaggart lecture, were arguing that that Ofcom should be weakened and that, you know, that there probably wasn't a need for the impartiality rules. I mean, goodness knows what Sky would be like if they got rid of the impartiality rules for TV news, because, you know, but I'm not sure that Britain is quite ready for Fox News yet. And then, you know, and then as well as Adam, there was also Kay Burley, who was coming in for a bit of stick, because she did an interview that was quite tricky and fractious, let's say, with...
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Steve, because we got a clip of that interview. Hey. This was Sky News presenter Kay Burley, who was criticised for her interview with electoral reformer David Babbs.
What people voted for was they
voted
for change.
Have they not? Did they vote for that or not?
They voted with hope. With hope.
Is that what they voted for
future?
Or not? Did they vote for that or not? That's
yes,
exactly what they voted for.
And what they voted.
So why are you protesting against it?
We're not protesting.
So what are you protesting
against anything?
For?
We're protesting for
well,
something.
It must be protesting against something.
We're protesting for something.
What
we're
are you protesting
for? Is a change to politics, for fair votes.
That's
for...
That's what they're negotiating at the moment.
Well,
so why do you need to protest?
That's what we really hope.
They're already doing it.
What we
you
really...
might as well go home and watch it on Sky News.
Sky News. Well, that sounds like a plug if ever I heard one.
Might as well talk about it on Media Talk.
Oh yes, award-winning Media Talk. Oh, sorry, don't jump the gun.
And then it was, and then that was followed up by lots of people during the interview, outside broadcast interviews that she was doing from then on. There was always somebody in the background shouting, "Get rid of Sky News. We hate Murdoch. Watch the BBC."
It's never good when a journalist or a news organisation becomes the story. Paul, I don't know if you saw either of those two interviews or what. What your thoughts were? Did you think you were sort of having a sneaky glimpse into a future where Ofcom allows broadcasters to be a bit more partial, or was it just a bit of a tired and emotional broadcasters getting carried away?
I saw the Adam Bolton one, and I thought it was really interesting because on the leadership debate, I mean, aside from the issue you mentioned about the question that was not actually planned, he was very sort of low-key, I thought, and actually quite dignified. And I was thinking, wow, this is great for Sky News. 4 million viewers, probably a record for Sky News. You know, they're really on the map now, aren't they? I mean, here you are, Sky, alongside BBC and ITV. This is fantastic. I think if this was deliberately intended to be a publicity stunt, it's gone a bit too far. Although it's probably great publicity, ultimately. No, I think he was just overwrought, weren't they? I mean, her hectoring style is extraordinary. I mean, you know, I can't understand how any journalist would ever think that's sensible, because the first thing you're taught is to listen, and she clearly wasn't.
Do you think, Steve, is it damaging to Adam Bolton? We were talking about how influential, and an entirely separate debate about how influential certain political reporters were, and the feeling was that Bolton had lost some of his reputation and maybe wasn't the influence he once was, or will it be forgotten in a few weeks' time?
But on the flip side, as just being said, you know, the fact is that Sky News was watched by more people during this election debate than at any other point in its history. I mean, I think lots of people aren't used to Sky News. I mean, I think Sky News is a very different style to the BBC. And, you know, and if you looked at the election debates, you know, Sky was sort of, you know, doing these big brandings on the side of buildings, and, you know, they had all their banners coming across the screen. And when people are used to, you know, sort of the Dimbleby version of it, where it's, you know, it's much more measured and calm, then, you know, it's a bit of a shock to the system. I think it is very interesting what this government will do and say about Ofcom, and, you know, and if Rupert Murdoch keeps on pushing to get rid of the impartiality rules for TV news as they are in America, because, you know, because Fox News has been so successful on the back of being allowed to be incredibly partisan. It's just not the British way, though, I don't think. I think TV news has, over many years, got so much more trust, and, you know, and repeated polls show this, you know, so much more trust than newspaper news because of its perceived impartiality.
Well, you've touched on here what might happen to how Ofcom might change the rules on TV broadcasting, and this connects to our next item, which is the fact that Jeremy Hunt's been handed the culture, media and sport job in the new government. Not only that, he's got responsibility for the London 2012 Olympics as well. So people speculated that he'd get the media job and possibly something bigger. And it looks like he's got both. Do you think the BBC has less to fear from a Tory Lib Dem coalition than it would have done from a straight ahead Conservative government? Can they unclench their buttocks a little?
Well, Hunter's been pretty clear, hasn't he, with his buttocks clenched about what he wants to do with the BBC. I suspect there's two things going on here. First of all, he's going to have to grapple with massive savings in his department. And, you know, if he's got to take sort of 60 million or so out, which is the figure that's been quoted, he's got to be very careful where he does that. And I guess the Olympics is going to be a contender. So that's a very hot potato. And how he manages that, goodness only knows. I also suspect that despite the fact, obviously, things have been put in place to try and keep the coalition together, focusing on the big issues are clearly going to dominate the agenda on the first months, if not the first year. And I'm not sure the BBC is going to be top of the list. I suspect they'll have less to fear than before. The BBC clearly is going to come in for some sort of scrutiny, but I don't think it's going to be top of the agenda.
Yeah, I think, Steve, they've probably got better things to look at than the BBC at the moment. And perhaps they've been, maybe not the right phrase, but let off the hook a bit.
They've got the economy to worry about. They've got an enormous number of really difficult things to worry about. They're probably not going to want to pick a fight with their coalition partners about something like the BBC, unless Rupert keeps on prodding them. And, you know, business is business as far as the News International is concerned. You know, and the big thing for them at the moment is the Times paywall, which I know we're going to discuss in a short while.
Always one step ahead of me.
For them, the biggest single problem that they think they face is the BBC's website, which was marked down for cuts, and I'll say that in inverted commas, in the Mark Thompson review, which was also going to axe Six Music. I mean, I say it in inverted commas because I think actually their cuts were just going to bring it down to a budget that it's currently on rather than the projected increase, and that most of the websites they're cutting actually appear to be already dead or disappeared and are just going to be warehoused somewhere else. I think the BBC probably can unclench its buttocks for a while, which will be good for them because they, you know, for the last year or so, they've virtually every policy decision they've made seems to have been with, you know, one eye on the possibility of a Tory government coming in.
I mean, what you want is the BBC who actually do this because it's the right thing to do, not because they're suddenly knee-jerked and thinking they've got to make some cuts to stave off bigger cuts. You know, what Thompson should be doing is really making sure he's got value for money. And I guess he's also saved slightly by the fact the economy is now starting to pick up, advertising revenues are starting to come up. So the argument that the BBC funding is out of kilter with the commercial sector is not as strong an argument as it was 12 months ago.
Funny, in this section, Steve Ryder is leaving ITV. This, of course, follows Adrian Child's arrival from the BBC to present their football coverage. When Ryder arrived at ITV in 2006, he bumped Gabby Logan off as their main football presenter.
Where's Ryder going, then?
Well, that remains to be seen. He could remain with ITV. I doubt
Sky, maybe.
Maybe Sky can't see it. Maybe he'll go back to the BBC and bump Gabby Logan off again.
Yeah, or maybe he'll, you know, he'll turn up on Channel 5. I was watching the football the other night, trying to work out who the commentators are and thinking, why have we got Graham Taylor doing the expert analysis on this game because he's rubbish.
Graham Taylor, but he's very big on Five Live, isn't he, Graham Taylor? He's their pundit of choice.
But this one also goes back to the Chris Evans thing as well, because Chris Evans, and his incredible popularity everywhere he goes, now signed up to The One Show, which is why Adrian Charles suddenly took that hissy fit and decided that he was going to go to ITV. Where I'm sure he will have a good World Cup and will be fine for a while, but doesn't always necessarily work out well for you, that move from a...
That direction never works, does it? You know, Des Lynam, there's a whole history of people who've gone that way and they've just sort of faded away.
Des was a lot older and it was, you know...
Maybe Steve Ryder, if he pops up the BBC, that'll be good for him. But if he goes to Channel 5, he's probably on the way, further on the way down.
Well, we'll have him here next week. Perhaps he can tell us all.
Yeah, no, I think he's a lovely man. I'm sure he's cooking.
Open
him nice.
Steve. Don't worry, Paul Robinson won't be in next week.
No,
be all right.
I'm fine.
Links to all these stories, as ever, on guardian.co.uk/mediatalk.
This competition, we ask our listeners every single year to look out for celebrities and to ask them to call the show.
Yeah, well, I heard it. I thought it would be a better competition if you got celebrities to look for your listeners.
He's at it again!
That's all I'm saying!
That was Christian O'Connell and Chris Evans squabbling like schoolboys at this week's Sony Radio Awards, where Chris Evans was suggesting that O'Connell uses his Who's Calling Christian competition to try and get Absolute Radio a few more listeners. Which is very, very unkind. We're sure they love each other, really. BBC Radio 5 Live won the night's big award. It was named UK Station of the Year. Paul, 5 Live, a worthy winner?
I was confused by this one. I mean, obviously it was leaked as Evans announced it, which was actually unfortunate. Look, 5 Live has won it before, and I was talking to Mike Lewis about this, you know, former deputy controller there, and he couldn't really see why 5 Live won it this year either. And I think 5 Live is consistently good, but what has it done this year to be the station of the year? I was not sure what the criteria were and on what basis it won it this year.
Well, a point I made to Adrian Van Clever and the controller afterwards was that the station today is almost a very different station to the one that presumably won the award, because we've had Richard Baker move to new slots, Gabby Logan came in, new late night presenter, and it's very much almost a station in transition. So I agree with you. But the two other nominees were Absolute Radio, which again is very much a station in transition, and Talk Sport.
If Five Live, you weren't quite sure why it deserved to get the award this year, then, you know, then the discussion about Absolute is, well, yes, it's doing interesting things, but it's losing listeners, so.
But it actually sounds, I think, a much better radio station than Virgin. It actually won two Sonys this year. And although, unfortunately, in the radios, it's lost 300,000 listeners, you know, so it's going in the wrong direction. It's a really odd one, that, because, you know, your ears tell you it's a great station, but the figures just don't stack up. I do feel a bit sorry for Clive and the guys there, because actually I think they're doing a really good job and they've yet to find the reward in the figures.
Absolute Radio, yes. I think they've done a lot of... there's a lot of goodwill out there and a lot of will for them to succeed. And they've got Frank Skinner on Saturdays, Dave Gorman on Sundays. They've just picked up the Premier League, some Premier League football rights for next season. And they got lots of innovations on digital. But as you say, it's just not translating into radios. And the sort of reasoning they had first off was that listeners didn't realise it was Absolute and still thought it was Virgin, so it didn't fit in their radio diaries properly. But I guess as each quarter goes by, that reasoning begins to wear a bit thin.
It does. And, of course, we don't know whether this station has actually lost a bit to Chris Evans. It's possible. I mean, Christian O'Connell, you know, to Chris Evans, it's not a crazy switch, is it? I'm not in any way questioning Five Live being a great station. It is a great station. But, you know, why this year? That's the question.
So who would have been the Robinson station of the year?
Do you know, I would have gone for Absolute Radio, actually, in terms of what they're doing on air. It'd be all radio too.
Right, okay. The other big winners of the night was Zane Lowe, who picked up another two Sonys to go with his enormous collection on Radio 1.
He has got a bulging cabinet, right? Yes.
Chris Moyles lost out again to Scott Mills.
Radio Personality of the Year, yes.
Scott Mills, so is he the? Is that an indication of the next presenter of the Radio 1 Breakfast Show?
I was pleased for Scott because he's actually not won very much in the past, and I think he deserves to win more than he has. And he is doing a great job. And what he does actually is he keeps on reinventing. He's very good at, you know, continually reinventing that show and bringing in new things. And when you think he came from GWR and Heart, where he wasn't really allowed much creativity, he's a big success story at Radio 1. He is clearly the next Breakfast Show DJ there.
And people say, Steve, when people talk about who's going to succeed more, and the argument against it being Scott Mills is people say, well, he's only a few months younger than Moyles, but you wouldn't know it to look at him. He could be his nephew.
He's saying he's large and he's bearded.
Well, he does look good. He looks a lot younger than Moyles. And also, I think I read that he connects a lot better with the younger listeners and is very much into his Twitter and all that kind of thing, whereas and his reference points possibly are slightly younger than Moyles.
And they've got Greg James too, who then can take on drive time. So they've got a bit of a sort of inheritance plan now, I think.
And the other winner, which I think was warmly received on the Sonys, was Adam and Joe, who were nominated four times last year and finally picked up a goal this year for best comedy.
Well,
which, I was glad to see.
Well, I was glad to see too. Well deserved. That was a great partnership.
And it gives hope to Nick Ferrari.
Well, we shouldn't mention Nick Ferrari because, you know what? I mean, poor old Nick Ferrari. I was willing Nick Ferrari to win every time his name came up. And he was nominated, I think, five times. I wrote in my little book, you know, he'll get this one. He wrote gold by it. And, of course, he didn't get a single gold. He just got silvers and bronze. And you look at the radio figures, and LBC, you have to say, has done very well again, largely down to Nick Ferrari. You know, his ratings are fantastic. So, you know, whilst Evans didn't get any Sonys and got the audience, Nick Ferrari didn't really get very much either. And John, you didn't mention, by the way, the bronze.
Oh, yes, of course.
For Media Talk. I think we should mention this, do you not think?
Well, I didn't want to mention it because I'm
you're too modest.
You know, a bit modest. But, tell the listeners about...
Because it's all Matt Wells's glory.
Best internet programme, the bronze went to Media Talk, presenter Matt Wells, producer Ben Green.
And we should give a shout-out to the Gold Award winner.
It's the Hackney Podcast, hackneypodcast.co.uk. Really, really, really interesting. I mean, I think fantastic. That's where the Sonys are good, that someone like that can win, as well as people like NME who won, and BFBS. Very good.
And that's just about it for this week. Please leave your thoughts on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk and make sure you subscribe for free while you're there so that every podcast gets automatically delivered to your MP3 player. You can join our Facebook group, we're Guardian Media Talk Podcast. Thanks again to my guests, Steve Busfield and Paul Robinson, and thank you for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.